Okay, good morning everyone. So myself Velu Govindan. I'm a wheat breeder based in Simit, Mexico. So this is our team. Ravi Singh is the head of the wheat breeding, and Yuan Fahab, he's a postdoc working with me, mapping aspects, and also the Hans Brown is the director of the wheat program in Simit. So James already gave the overall view what we are doing in terms of mapping and also in breeding. So GEMS is responsible for developing tools and methods, and we are focusing on the product development, including markers. Okay, this is my outline of the presentation. So I'm going to talk about why we are doing this, the prevalence and the severity of the micronutrient malnutrition among the resource poor consumers, also the breeding strategy, so how much genetic variability, diversity we have in the improved or also in the wild relatives of wheat, and how we are doing the pre-breeding, product development, and how we are doing with the molecular markers in terms of we have some of the QTL mapping studies and also association mapping GWAS studies, and also we have started small project on genomic selection, so quite interesting. And also we have some of the product development, so how we are doing in terms of disseminating, commercializing some of the first wave biofortified zinc wheat in the target regions, and what are the key factors for success. So if you see globally, more than 2 billion people are malnourished. Some of the red spot countries, the prevalence is even the severity of malnutrition, either due to zinc, iron, or vitamin A, so it's alarming. So there is a need to improve the nutritional status of these people. Mostly they depend on the cereal-based diet. I'm going to show you about how much dietary energy they come from major staples like rice and wheat. So the orange countries are not that severe, but it's moderate level of malnutrition. So there is a great need to improve the nutritional status. If you see the mortality, so about 6.3 million children under 5, they die every year. So nearly 17,000 kids under 5, they die due to malnutrition. Not only malnutrition, about 43% of those deaths linked to malnutrition. So we need to improve the nutritional status. If you see the overall the wheat consumption, so the overall wheat contributes about 20% of the dietary energy across the globe. So if you see some of the countries like West Asia, Central Asia, and also in South Asia, so the dietary energy contributes from wheat is even up to 50%. So the wheat is not only the source for the calorie, it also needs to be a source for important nutrients like zinc. And also if you see this one, so there is the most of the developing countries, the economy is growing. So it means the middle income group is increasing. So here, 1.8 billion now, it will go to 4.8 billion. So they don't want just the food. They want the nutritious food. They want all the important things in their balanced diet. So it's a time. So I think some of the wheat breeders here might know the Green Revolution started in Mexico. By developing the semi-dwarf for the famous agronomist, Dr. Norman E. Borlaug, so Nobel laureate. So it's almost more than 50, 60 years. It's a time to now to look at the other aspects of the wheat improvements, this kind of nutrition revolution, it should come. So the biofortification is a cost-effective strategy to pack additional minerals and vitamins into the staple crops like wheat. So our objective here is to develop high zinc competitive wheat varieties, which means should also yield higher or at par with the Czechs, and also we need to improve the other agronomic aspects like morphological characters and also end-use quality traits. So the benefit is like we are targeting the smallholder farmers, so mostly they grow their crop and they consume locally, so they don't go to supermarket and buy the fortified flour. So this is to reach those who are not reached by other and nutritional interventions. Okay, this is a target areas for high zinc wheat. So if you see starting from Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh and Nepal, it's about 50 million hectare wheat area. This is our main target. There are several reasons to choose this area. Basically, these are smallholder farmers. They grow and they consume the produce, and also the rate of malnutrition is high because of the dependency on wheat or rice for the major source of diet and dietary energy. And also the form of wheat they consume is kind of wholemeal flatbread. So in that way, if you see the zinc and iron, they are loaded in the alluvial layer and the outer layer. So they can retain most of the nutrients when they consume. So when they make, so that is one of the reasons to choose this region. So now we have two target regions. We call northwestern plain zone of India and Pakistan, and also the eastern Gangetic plain of India. So now we have the products which are already out in the field, and farmers now also have started growing this. So what is the target level? So if you see the baseline, some of the common varieties in that region, it has about 25 parts per million zinc. So our target is to improve about 12 parts per million, which is the recommendations came from the nutritionist group. So this can have some significant effect on their nutritional need. Okay, so I'm going to the breeding aspect. So first we need to look at the genetic diversity. So this is the variation we have in the improved the normal commercial varieties. So the maximum is like 24 parts per million, and iron is about 32. So this is not enough. So we need to bring some new sources. So we don't have good enough variation in the late gene pool. So we need to go to the some of the wild relatives like Dicoccydus, spelt, and some of the dicalcum. So we also recreated synthetic hexaploid wheat by crossing some of the dicalcum with Tauschii for the D genome. So we use some of those synthetic hexaploid wheat as source for in the hybrid wheat breeding program. Also, as I mentioned, the dicoccydus, we have good variations, about 3 to 4-fold variation, and so that the good part of this, we can readily cross with the hexaploid wheat. So, but when we use some of these wild relatives, we need to make often at least 2 backcross to the adapter source. So we need to have the good agronomy package, and also to bring those zinc alleles into the late background. Also, the another area of interesting thing is the land races. They are quite little bit more decent than the wild relatives. For example, some of the collections in Afghanistan, so there is a huge variation for zinc in the blue bars. And also some of the Iranian land races, they also have some. So this is quite sufficient enough to go ahead in the breeding program for high zinc. So the advantage here is they are little more decent agronomy than even single backcross with adapted background is good enough. Okay, so let me start about the breeding. This is the shuttle breeding scheme. So this was introduced by Dr. Norman Borlaug to have 2 cycles in Mexico. So this is our main cycle, Ciudad Obregón, close to Sonora, close to Arizona border here. And the another site is in the highlands, about 2,000 meters above the sea level. We go for summer cycle. So also we expose our material to the different environmental conditions. We expose them to different kind of rust, like we expose here for stripe rust and leaf rust, and also here stem rust. So we expose our material to different temperature and the day length time. So which brings the wide adaptable photoperiod insensitive lines. So this is one of the success story from the Green Revolution started in 1960. So how we are doing in breeding for high zinc wheat? So annually we make about 500 simple cross, mostly the progenitors like land races or some of the high zinc donors, and cross with the adapted high yielding rust resistant parents, and about 250 to 300 back cross or top cross we make annually. And we follow the selected bulk, or we call modified bulk method. And then from F4 to F5, we make head rows. So the head rows are about 6,000 to 10,000 head rows, which will be planted with the repeated checks on the zinc applied soil. And we look for agronomy and also the zinc increase. Once we get the lines which has got good agronomy and also high zinc, then we planted them in the highlands. to look for the other disease parameters, disease resistance like yellow rust and leaf rust, and also we look for agronomy. So eventually they will go to the first year yield trials, about 1,000 to 1,500 lines in three rep trial, all for lattice design. So the lines which yields higher than or equal to checks only can be analyzed for zinc. So, and then for the other end use quality like processing quality test. So based on yield and high zinc, then we advance those 100, 200 to 300 lines to the advanced yield trials, we call secondary yield trial in different environments, which we artificially create in Obregon, starting from the normal irrigation, partially irrigated drought conditions, like we put water in the drip, and also the we plant them under late planting for heat stress. So based on all this data, now we can able to select the stable yielding and the lines which has got high, and also this is resistant lines for the international yield trial, which we sent out to our partners in the South Asia and also other parts of the world. So this is a guide for crossing. So as I mentioned, so often we bring some of those wild relatives or land races into the adapted background. So now we have some of the good lines, good looking agronomy, agronomically good looking lines with high zinc. So then we make, and also resistant to rust. So we make intercrosses between those high zinc and improved lines, and often backcross with the adapted high yielding parent. So now we have second round of breeding, which means the lines came from the first set of white cross derivatives is being often crossed. So now we get more decent looking agronomy. As James mentioned, so this one of the gift, so this one of the breakthrough for us in terms of breeding. So annually we measure more than 10,000 samples with XRF for zinc. So the idea is to here is to discard the lines which has got at least low zinc. So just keep the curve on the higher zinc side. So here is the correlation between ICP and also XRF. It's quite high. So rust resistance is so vital for product adoption, especially when we talk about smallholder farmers, starting from leaf rust, stripe rust, and stem rust. So I think some of the wheat scientists might know about the UG99. That was one of the devastating rust, stem rust. It appeared in Uganda and then also in the other parts of Kenya and Ethiopia. So under the DRRW project, so they set up a hotspot screening nursery, a screening site in nearby Nairobi, in Joro. So annually we go and evaluate our nurseries for the stem rust resistance. So basically, one of the major genes which was holding resistance for decades, like SR31, so it got hit, so it broke down in 1998. So now we are getting to some new genes, kind of fertile plant resistance type, to keep the stem rust resistance. So when I talk about the Ciudad Obregón, it's a quite uniform field site. So this is one of the best site for yield testing. So you can see the coefficient of variation for yield less than 5%, and also the zinc. Zinc is quite stable. So when we start this project, you can see this gradient from this blue bar to red. This is a huge gradient in the field. So with the consultancy of agronomists, and we started applying recommended dose of zinc sulfate to homogenize the area. So now we started seeing some more similar stable homogenized performance. So if you see here, the local check and the high zinc varieties, just 5 ppm when we don't have the soil zinc zinc sulfate application. So when we apply zinc sulfate, so the genetic difference between the local check are the low ones to high ones becomes highly visible. It's about 23 parts per million. So it doesn't matter if you if you don't have soil zinc, so it will not have. It's very hard to differentiate the high ones and the low ones. So here the idea is to differentiate, identify the high zinc stable genotypes. So this is just the frequency distribution of the Harvest Plus yield trial, which we conducted last year in Ciudad Obregón. You can see about 50% of the lines which out-yielded our best check in terms of here. This is 100% of our check, so you can see about 50% of the lines, they yielded more than the checks. So which means we are also making progress in terms of improving the yield potential of the lines. Also, you can see the zinc increment over check. So you can see this, most of the lines, they have at least some zinc, and up to we have met some of the lines fully breeding target. And also when you put these two together, so these the lines which falls under this circle, they are the interest, which has the lines which has high yield and also high zinc. So this is our interest. And then we will select these lines and distribute to our partners. Also recently we found a paper in Nature. It says the climate change might affect the nutritional content, especially zinc, iron, protein, and also other things. So we need to prepare for this. So what we do also, we expose our material to the limited water, drought stress. So we put water limited, about 180 millimeter water. You can see the genetic difference. So this one, it has yielded high, looking nicely when compared to the other one, which is hardly, not even heading. So we need to select for those, some of the drought tolerant lines. And also we expose our material for the continuous heat stress. For example, the normal planting is already like, you know, late milk stage or dwarf stage, and it's just emerged. So we are exposing our material to different type of stresses to in order to cope up with the climate change. So I'm coming into the markers area. So we started one of the QTL mapping study in PBW343, which is the adapted material, adapted variety, which is still being grown more than 4 million hectares in India. And this Kenya Swara is a variety from Kenya, so resistant to stem rust as well. So we found good variation in the population. So you can see nice distribution. We found two important loci, which is in 1 in 2A, 2B and 3A. So the interesting thing is, you can see the all three environments, and they have the stably detected, this QTL, also 2B and 3A. And the interesting part of 2B QTL was, it is pleiotrophic with 1,000 kernel weight. So we can able to increase 1,000 kernel weight and also zinc simultaneously. So based on the top 15 to 20 lines, the rails which has got high zinc and also good 1,000 kernel weight, we selected and we are using in our breeding program. So we will use some of the flanking markers to select in the progenies. So we also published recently this paper in molecular breeding. So you can see the nice association between grain zinc and other traits like 1,000 kernel weight, test weight, etc. So this is one of the interesting study which we do in the GWAS study. So this is the frequency distribution of grain zinc in the 320, the association mapping panel, which James was showing the good phenology. So we genotyped in the Illumina platform here in Kansas State, and also you can see the frequency. So there is here. So we align the environments with high zinc to the low zinc. So but still the range is quite similar. So only there is a environment effect, but the rank order remains same. So which is quite interesting part, which makes more heritable for these traits. So this is a Manhattan plot. So you can see, I just put all the environments. You can't really even see. So the loci and chromosomes 1A, 2A, 2B, and 6B are more stable. At least in three environments, they have been stably detected. And the loci and chromosome 2B is stably detected for both iron and also zinc. So some of these regions will be narrowed down and look for the associations again. So we started some of the genomic selection project. So to start with, we use the association mapping panel as a testing panel. So 80% of the lines we used as the training set and 20% the testing sets. So you can see these two are the highly heritable environments from Obregon. So you can see about 50% the prediction between the observed and the predictor value. So this is quite good enough to go ahead with the genomic selection. So if you see this is the steps for the training. We have the training population, and also we have the genotyping and phenotyping data, and we make the models. So what we do in the breeding pipeline, so the materials which comes out of breeding, we just genotype, and we can able to estimate the breeding values, and based on that we can able to make selections before we go for yield trials. This way we can cut down some lot of resources for this breeding. So Just about the product dissemination, so this is one of the high-yielding, extra-early maturing wheat variety which will be commercialized in eastern part of India. So more than 1,000 farmers, they already have this seed, and it is being going even more higher adoption rate. So the fast adoption can be possible because of the we call the participatory variety selection, where the farmers and also the scientists, they go on hand-on-hand. So they make the big demonstration plots, and the farmers, they come and select for the yield and other later. Because these are hidden traits, they can't see, but they see for the agronomic traits. So we have the off-season seed multiplication. So if you see this, the subcontinent, so the wheat growing season is from October, November to May. So we went to the Himalayas and we produced some off-season seed multiplication, so to make about 400 tons. To make available seed for the next coming planting season. So this is one of the breakthrough achievement in terms of developing tools, as James mentioned about training and other things. The other interesting thing is the heritability. So you can see some of these environments is moderate to high heritability, except some of the low yield, low zinc, which are environments with less than optimum soil zinc. So the genetic correlation between environments also quite sufficient enough. So you can make this encourages to make progress in breeding, and also the interest from the target countries. For example, in India, they have the huge program on Nutrifarm scheme, where they want to not only for wheat, other biofortified crops, they go into that program. It goes into the even the remote areas. So we have the active breeding program in Mexico. So we continue to develop lines, competitive high zinc lines. So we deploy every year 150 best lines to our partners. So to meet the variety release need, we have the pre-release seed multiplication. So the progress is visible. So zinc varieties are being adapted. So this is a summary. So some of the varieties which are already in the farmers field, they can able to give at least 70% of the recommended daily allowance of zinc. So we need to look for continuously the phyllotropic QDLs like 2B. And also some of the markers like other interests, like we have on 1N6P. Also, we need to pyramid some of those genes in QDLs into the major breeding lines. So the other interesting thing is the genomic selection. So we're going to start this one, and also we are doing some marker estate selection on the high phytase alleles. So the yield is a need, and nutrition is a want. Undernutrition is a disease. So let's incorporate the want into the need, and to achieve the sustainable food and nutritional security. So I would like to acknowledge some of the Harvest Plus, the CGR research program on agriculture and nutrition, and also other partners and collaborators in developing and developed countries. Thank you.